Chapter 44. Of an educational character, the school at which young Charlie Hexham had first learned from a book the streets being, for pupils of his degree, the great preparatory establishment in which very much that is never unlearned is learned without and before book was a miserable loft in an unsavory yard. Its atmosphere was oppressive and disagreeable. It was crowded, noisy, and confusing. Half the pupils dropped asleep, or fell into a state of waking stupefaction. The other half kept them in either condition, by maintaining a monotonous droning noise, as if they were performing, out of time and tune, on a ruder sort of bagpipe. The teachers, animated solely by good intentions, had no idea of execution, and a lamentable jumble was the upshot of their kind endeavors. It was a school for all ages, and for both sexes. The latter were kept apart, and the former were partitioned off into square assortments. But, all the place was pervaded by a grimly ludicrous pretense, that every pupil was childish and innocent. This pretense, much favored by the lady visitors, led to the ghastliest absurdities. Young women old in the vices of the commonest and worst life, were expected to profess themselves enthralled by the good child's book, The Adventures of Little Marjorie, who resided in the village cottage by the mill, severely reproved and morally squashed the miller, when she was 5, and he was 50, divided her porridge with singing birds, denied herself a new nankeen bonnet, on the ground that the turnips did not wear nankeen bonnets, neither did the sheep who ate them, who plaited straw, and delivered the dreariest orations to all comers, at all sorts of unseasonable times. So, unwieldy young dredgers and hulking mudlarks were referred to the experiences of Thomas Twopence, who, having resolved not to rob under circumstances of uncommon atrocity his particular friend and benefactor, of 18 pence, presently came into supernatural possession of 3 and 6 pence, and lived a shining light ever afterwards. Note that the benefactor came to no good. Several swaggering sinners had written their own biographies in the same strain, it always appearing from the lessons of those very boastful persons, that you were to do good, not because it was good, but because you were to make a good thing of it. Contrariwise, the adult pupils were taught to read, if they could learn, out of the New Testament, and by dint of stumbling over the syllables, and keeping their bewildered eyes on the particular syllables coming round to their turn, were as absolutely ignorant of the sublime history, as if they had never seen or heard of it. An exceedingly and confoundingly perplexing jumble of a school, in fact, where black spirits and gray, red spirits and white, jumbled every night, and particularly every Sunday night. For then, an inclined plane of unfortunate infants would be handed over to the prosiest and worst of all the teachers with good intentions, whom nobody older would endure, who, taking his stand on the floor before them as chief executioner, would be attended by a conventional volunteer boy as executioner's assistant. When and where it first became the conventional system that a wearier inattentive infant in a class must have its face smoothed downward with a hot hand, or when and where the conventional volunteer boy first beheld such system in operation, and became inflamed with a sacred zeal to administer it, matters not. It was the function of the chief executioner to hold forth, and it was the function of the acolyte to dart at sleeping infants, yawning infants, restless infants, whimpering infants, and smooth their wretched faces, sometimes with one hand, as if he were anointing them for a whisker, sometimes with both hands, applied after the fashion of blinkers. And so the jumble would be in action in this department for a mortal hour, the exponent drawling on to my dear child Erinner, let us say, for example, about the beautiful coming to the sepulchre, and repeating the word sepulchre, commonly used among infants, 500 times, and never once hinting what it meant, the conventional boy smoothing away right and left, as an infallible commentary, the whole hotbed of flushed and exhausted infants exchanging measles, rashes, whooping cough, fever, and stomach disorders, as if they were assembled in High Market for the purpose. Even in this temple of good intentions, an exceptionally sharp boy, exceptionally determined to learn, could learn something, and, having learned it, could impart it much better than the teachers, as being more knowing than they, and not at the disadvantage in which they stood towards the shrewder pupils. In this way it had come about that Charlie Hexam had risen in the jumble, taught in the jumble, and been received from the jumble into a better school. So you want to go and see your sister, Hexam? Apostrophe, apostrophe, if you please, Mr. Headstone. Apostrophe, I have half a mind to go with you. Where does your sister live? Apostrophe, why, she is not settled yet, Mr. Headstone. I'd rather you didn't see her till she is settled, if it was all the same to you. Apostrophe, look here, Hexam. Apostrophe, Mr. Bradley Headstone, highly certificated stipendiary schoolmaster, drew his right forefinger through one of the buttonholes of the boy's coat, and looked at it attentively. I hope your sister may be good company for you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, why do you doubt it, Mr. Headstone? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I did not say I doubted it. Apostrophe, no, sir, you didn't say so. Apostrophe, Bradley Headstone looked at his finger again, took it out of the buttonhole and looked at it closer, bit the side of it, and looked at it again. You see, Hexam, you will be one of us. In good time you are sure to pass a creditable examination, and become one of us. Then the question is apostrophe, the boy waited, so long for the question, while the schoolmaster looked at a new side of his finger, and bit it, and looked at it again, that at length the boy repeated. The question is, sir, apostrophe, apostrophe, whether you had not better leave well alone. Apostrophe, is it well, to leave my sister alone, Mr. Headstone? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I do not say so, because I do not know. I put it to you. I ask you to think of it. I want you to consider. You know how well you are doing here. Apostrophe, after all, she got me here, apostrophe, said the boy, with a struggle. Perceiving the necessity of it, apostrophe, acquiesced the schoolmaster, and making up her mind fully to the separation. Yes. Apostrophe, the boy, with a return of that former reluctance or struggle, or whatever it was, seemed to debate with himself. At length he said, raising his eyes to the master's face, I wish you'd come with me and see her, Mr. Headstone, though she is not settled. I wish you'd come with me, and take her in the rough, and judge her for yourself. Apostrophe, you are sure you would not like, apostrophe, asked the schoolmaster, to prepare her? Apostrophe, apostrophe, my sister Lizzie, apostrophe, said the boy, proudly, wants no preparing, Mr. Headstone. What she is, and shows herself to be. There's no pretending about my sister. Apostrophe, his confidence in her, sat more easily upon him than the indecision with which he had twice contended. It was his better nature to be true to her, if it were his worse nature to be wholly selfish. And as yet the better nature had the stronger hold. Well, I can spare the evening, apostrophe, said the schoolmaster. I am ready to walk with you. Apostrophe, thank you, Mr. Headstone. And I am ready to go. Apostrophe, Bradley Headstone, in his decent black coat and waistcoat, and decent white shirt, and decent formal black tie, and decent pantaloons of pepper and salt, with his decent silver watch in his pocket, and its decent hair guard round his neck, looked a thoroughly decent young man of 26. He was never seen in any other dress, and yet there was a certain stiffness in his manner of wearing this, as if there were a want of adaptation between him and it, recalling some mechanics in their holiday clothes. He had acquired mechanically a great store of teacher's knowledge. He could do mental arithmetic mechanically, sing at sight mechanically, blow various wind instruments mechanically, even play the great church organ mechanically. From his early childhood up, his mind had been a place of mechanical stowage. the arrangement of his wholesale warehouse, so that it might be always ready to meet the demands of retail dealers. History here, geography there, astronomy to the right, political economy to the left, natural history, the physical sciences, figures, music, the lower mathematics, and what not, all in their several places. This carrot imparted to his countenance a look of care, while the habit of questioning and being questioned had given him a suspicious manner, or a manner that would be better described as one of lying in wait. There was a kind of settled trouble in the face. It was the face belonging to a naturally slower and attentive intellect, that had toiled hard to get what it had won, and that had to hold it now that it was gotten. He always seemed to be uneasy lest anything should be missing from his mental warehouse, and taking stock to assure himself. Suppression of so much to make room for so much had given him a constrained manner, over and above. Yet there was enough of what was animal, and of what was fiery though smoldering, still visible in him, to suggest that, if young Bradley Headstone, when a pauper lad, had chanced to be told off for the sea, he would not have been the last man in a ship's crew. Regarding that origin of his, he was proud, moody, and sullen, desiring it to be forgotten. And few people knew of it. In some visits to the jumble his attention had been attracted to this boy Hexham. An undeniable boy for a pupil teacher, an undeniable boy to do credit to the master who should bring him on. Combined with this consideration, there may have been some thought of the pauper lad now never to be mentioned. Be that how it might, he had with pains gradually worked the boy into his own school, and procured him some offices to discharge there, which were repaid with food and lodging. Such were the circumstances that had brought together Bradley Headstone and young Charlie Hexham that autumn evening. Autumn, because full half a year had come and gone since the bird of prey lay dead upon the river shore. The schools, for they were twofold, as the sexes were down in that district of the flat country tending to the Thames, where Kent and Surrey meet, and where the railways still bestride the market gardens that will soon die under them. The schools were newly built, and there were so many like them all over the country, that one might have thought the whole were but one restless edifice with the locomotive gift of Aladdin's palace. They were in a neighborhood which looked like a toy neighborhood taken in blocks out of a box by a child of particularly incoherent mind, and set up anyhow, here, one side of a new street, there, a large solitary public house facing nowhere, here, another unfinished street already in ruins, there, a church, here, an immense new warehouse, there, a dilapidated old country villa. Then, a medley of black ditch, sparkling cucumber frame, rank field, richly cultivated kitchen garden, brick viaduct, arch-spanned canal, and disorder of rosiness and fog. As if the child had given the table a kick, and gone to sleep. But, even among school buildings, school teachers, and school pupils, all according to pattern and all engendered in the light of the latest gospel according to monotony, the older pattern into which so many fortunes have been shaped for good and evil, comes out. It came out in Miss Peacher the schoolmistress, watering her flowers, as Mr. Bradley Headstone walked forth. It came out in Miss Peacher the schoolmistress, watering the flowers in a little moldy bit of garden attached to her small official residence, with little windows like the eyes in needles, and little doors like the covers of schoolbooks. Small, shining, neat, methodical, and buxom was Miss Peacher, cherry-cheeked and tuneful of voice. A little pincushion, a little housewife, a little book, a little workbox, a little set of tables and weights and measures, and a little woman, all in one. She could write a little essay on any subject, exactly a slate long, beginning at the left-hand top of one side and ending at the right-hand bottom of the other, and the essay should be strictly according to rule. If Mr. Bradley Headstone had addressed a written proposal of marriage to her, she would probably have replied in a complete little essay on the theme exactly a slate long, but would certainly have replied yes. For she loved him. the decent air guard that went round his neck and took care of his decent silver watch was an object of envy to her. So would Miss Teacher have gone round his neck and taken care of him. Of him, insensible. Because he did not love Miss Teacher. Miss Teacher's favorite pupil, who assisted her in her little household, was in attendance with a can of water, to replenish her little watering pot, and sufficiently divined the state of Miss Teacher's affections to feel it necessary that she herself should love young Charlie Hexham. So, there was a double palpitation among the double stocks and double wallflowers, when the master and the boy looked over the little gate. A fine evening, Miss Teacher, apostrophe said the master. A very fine evening, Mr. Headstone, apostrophe said Miss Teacher. Are you taking a walk? Apostrophe, Hexham, and I are going to take a long walk. Apostrophe, charming weather, apostrophe remarked Miss Teacher, for a long walk. Apostrophe, ours is rather on business than mere pleasure, apostrophe said the master. Miss Teacher inverting her watering pot, and very carefully shaking out the few last drops over a flower, as if there were some special virtue in them which would make it a Jack's beanstalk before morning, called for replenishment to her pupil, who had been speaking to the boy. Good night, Miss Teacher, apostrophe said the master. Good night, Mr. Headstone, apostrophe said the mistress. The pupil had been, in her state of pupillage, so imbued with the class custom of stretching out an arm, as if to hail a cab or omnibus, whenever she found she had an observation on hand, to offer to Miss Teacher, that she often did it in their domestic relations, and she did it now. Well, Marianne? Apostrophe said Miss Teacher. If you please, ma'am, Hexham said they were going to see his sister. Apostrophe, but that can't be, I think, apostrophe returned Miss Teacher, because Mr. Headstone can have no business with her. Apostrophe, Marianne again hailed. Well, Marianne? Apostrophe, if you please, ma'am, perhaps it's Hexham's business? Apostrophe, Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.